Springline Productions are pleased to present A Little Bit of Luck by Tony Green. Performed by the Springline Radio Players, directed by Tony Green, with editing and sound design by Anthony Gofton. We hope you enjoy A Little Bit of Luck.
No, I haven't bought flowers today. Didn't seem appropriate. You see, the thing is that, well, I've got something to tell you. Now, I can just imagine you preparing for the worst, steeling yourself for whatever's to come, bracing yourself and pushing the creases out of whatever you're wearing if you're standing up. If you're sitting down, maybe leaning back in your chair, looking at me over your reading glasses as if to say, tread carefully, there are some things that even I won't forgive. Or just smiling because I'm being silly. Because I also imagine you in whatever peaceful eternal rest you're in, looking at me with that other face you had. The one of complete and benevolent kindness. The one that said, no matter what stupidity you've got yourself involved in, I love you and we will sort it. That's the one I fear the most. Like that time I bought the Fiat 126. Remember, I thought it was a nice little fixer-upper, fun little project. I recall you reminding me that I had to take our normal car to Halfords if it needed the wipers changed, so I was unlikely to have the skill to keep a 1980s Italian rust bucket on the road. It was a well-made point, as always. And when I eventually sold it on, after the trip to Halfords to fix the wipers, I only lost 300 quid on the deal. Could have been much worse. Which brings me to, well, now, really. There's something I need to tell you. I've got to be honest. It's been on my mind a lot lately. The other day I was trying to empty the vacuum cleaner and dust and crap just burst out everywhere. I realised then that I'd got so many other things to worry about and think about and get done now that you're gone. The guilt was just taking up too much of my limited brain space. So I put my shoes on and came straight up here with the intention of telling you everything. So I'm going to. Now, I suppose you should probably have some kind of context to it. Now I know you're rolling your eyes and, or getting pensive or angrily just wanting me to get to the point, but I always think that setting the scene is important. Although I know that you say this is why my stories take forever. Well, maybe they do. Maybe I should just come out and say it. So I will. The thing is, gosh, this is really hard. Okay, I know. Just get on with it. We are millionaires. See? I bet you wish you'd let me set the scene now, don't you? But the fact is that you made me tell the story in reverse. And so now, if you have questions, I can't guarantee that they won't come out all jumbled up. The principal fact is that we are millionaires. Well, actually, we're 8.23 millionaires or multi-millionaires or something like that. Fundamentally, we have over 8 million quid in our bank account. So, that's the what and the where. The how is because of a massive lottery win, and the when is just over 2 years ago. Yep, that's why I'm here. I'm finally telling you because the who element of the story is, well, me. So, now I'm going to take it from the beginning and fill in the blanks. Now, try not to interrupt, as there's a fair bit to get through. It all started with a phone call. You were out, as I recall, and the girl on the phone was ever so convincing.
Hello, this is Gail. I'm calling from Guinevere Customer Services. Can I check that I am talking to Mr. A. Billingham?
I tried to tell her that I wasn't interested in buying anything, but she'd obviously been told that before.
Actually, Mr. Billingham, this is a call with some good news. I'm calling to inform you that a lottery ticket, purchased in your name from the account you set up with us and paid for via a direct debit payment, has been verified as a winning ticket. This was from the draw 3 weeks ago. Since there was no claim made by yourself, we verified the winning ticket by computer and have contacted you directly. I hope that's okay.
Eh? Frankly, I couldn't remember the last time I actually bought a lottery ticket. But then I remembered that we decided to do it with the same numbers each week on direct debit, to save me having to stand in line at the newsagent. I always hated that. Anyway, I was fighting the temptation to ask her what the bloody hell she was on about when she spoke again.
I just wanted to make sure you were happy with us contacting you directly. Only, I have to tell you that you have won rather a lot of money.
Then I started to smell a rat. I was trying to work out which of my friends knew a girl young enough to pull this off as a wind-up. The only one I could think of was Jock, and his daughter has a voice like rusty metal being smashed together. This girl was bubbly and vivacious and professional-sounding. Jock's daughter spoke in a series of grunts, which, according to him, basically boiled down to demands for meals and loans of money. I doubt she had the performance skills to pull bubbly, vivacious and professional off.
Mr. Billingham?
Of course, it was a wind-up. But there was no harm in playing along, as long as it didn't seem like I was being taken in. Right, lottery win, eh? So, how much then?
Well, there were 10 winning tickets sharing a jackpot of £82,300,000. So that works out to be £8.23 million. Congratulations from all of us here, Mr. Billingham.
Oh, cheers.
I must say, you are being very calm, Mr. Billingham. It'll probably take a while to sink in. So in the meantime, I'm going to email you the confirmation of your win and which account it will go into. It should clear by tomorrow or the day after. By law, we need to pay it into the account where the ticket payment has come from, if that's okay.
Fine.
There's also a pack containing some other things, which I recommend you read, including information about publicity and other support you may be interested in.
Other support?
Well, some people have difficulty adjusting to changes like this. We like to take care of our winners, Mr. Billingham. Anyway, I'll leave you with the good news and get this information pack sent off to you. I assume you have a few calls to make now.
Oh, yes.
Well, once again, from all of us at Guinevere, the warmest congratulations.
Cheers. I did make calls. Simon, Robbo, Neil, Will, even Jock. I told them I wasn't taken in and they could ram their ineffective wind-up with a sun don't shine. None of them confessed or even sounded rumbled. So I decided if that was the way they wanted it, fine by me. Put it out of my mind. Until about 2 days later. It was a Saturday. We were in town and I went to grab some cash out of the machine. I don't usually check the balance, but that day, for some reason, I did. And there it was. Available balance, £8,264,934. Our savings suddenly swallowed up by this massive figure which lit up the screen like a nuclear blast. I was surprised the bloody light it gave off didn't singe my corneas. Now, for all their ingenuity, Jock and Neil and the boys may have paid some girl to hoax call me, but they couldn't hack my bank account. Still unbelieving, though, I did check for hidden cameras or some other sign of a TV prank, but the street was empty. Then it started to sink in. It was real. I won't lie, but it was honestly the closest I have ever come to fouling myself as an adult. I mean, apart from that food poisoning from June and Barry's barbecue. I stood there sweating with my stomach gurgling. I wasn't sure if I was going to pass out, vomit, or crap myself, or a mixture of all three. It really was like June and Barry's barbecue. As it was, I didn't do any of those things, because you came out of the shop and asked if I thought we needed milk. I'm not sure what I said, but you didn't push the issue, and it gave me time I needed to get myself together. Then we went to buy some milk. I can't remember anything of the journey, apart from making a plan to check the account again online when we got home, and then find this pack the girl said she was sending in my emails. I wanted to be absolutely sure before I told you. I also thought I'd take a shower and change my clothes. I think this was because the memories of June and Barry's barbecue ran even deeper than my current state of panic. So we got home, put the shopping away, you settled in front of the TV. I remember you complaining how my films were taking up too much of the sky planner. I assumed that you were there for the duration, so I took a look at our balance online. This time, it was simply there in black and white, no brain-melting green. Just a simple balance, showing a massive, incomprehensibly large number, and a number of messages from the bank inviting us in for a chat to discuss investment opportunities. I found the pack that Gail from Guinevere had sent pretty quickly. Oh, her name was spelt with a Y, by the way. The pack was full of congratulations and some advice regarding how to handle the win. The first piece of advice, written in big letters, was always take your time, do nothing in haste, and have a holiday so you can allow the news to sink in. As far as I was concerned, it had sunk in. I didn't need a holiday, and you always hated them. One of the things I've loved about you for all these years was the fact that you were happy to stay where we were and take a lot of long weekends. You never wanted to just go off and bake on a beach or, God forbid, go sightseeing around a strange city where the beer tastes odd. Anyway, I continued to scroll through the FAQs, suggestions and pictures of grinning people with awful houses cracking champagne in the front lawn. There was something that seemed vulgar about the whole thing. Taking ownership of money you hadn't earned and doing it with a smile. I carried on down the page until I got to what appeared to be the serious stuff. This wasn't congratulatory or a celebration of any kind. This was a warning. It was hidden well, but it was there all the same. Contact details in case things become too much. Offering advice on how to handle the changes. Changes. It was all there in front of me. Champagne on the front lawn and posing for those bloody photographs. Changes. It was about 20 minutes of staring into space and rolling the word over in my mind before I rang the number in the pack. I eventually got an appointment to see someone after I'd been referred by a slightly cross person on the helpline. He asked me a few questions, mainly about anxiety, and then suggested a regular call. I said I'd prefer to see someone face to face. You could practically hear him rolling his eyes as if his professional pride at being a telephone counsellor was being irredeemably disrespected. Admittedly it was, but I was the customer, and if I was going to talk about personal stuff, I wanted to do it in a plush office with bookshelves and a couch, as opposed to in my own hallway. I received an email later that morning from a man called Martin, who was apparently a specialist counsellor. His offices were in Manchester, so he suggested that he came down to me and initially simply met for a coffee. I asked if this was the way it was normally done, and he assured me that it was. So, a week later, off to Costa I went. Martin was a very nice man. He was younger than I expected, but nonetheless seemed to know his stuff. He was one of those people that just look intelligent without having to age or put glasses or a tweed jacket on. He started by asking how I felt about the win. I told him that I was trying to make the right decisions and this is why I got in touch. He asked me a bit about where I was from and where we lived. Then he asked me about how my wife had reacted. I was completely honest and confessed that I hadn't told you yet. He asked me why, and I said that I didn't really know. He tilted his head at this and I felt compelled to fill the silence. I said that I supposed I was holding on to normality for as long as possible, or wanted to know all the facts before dropping such an enormous bombshell. He smiled as if he'd heard that one before. I asked if that was common, and he told me it was more common than one might think. I hadn't given any of it that much thought. He said I probably should. We sat in silence for a few minutes after that. I didn't want to make it easy for him by filling the silence again and analysing myself for him. In the end, I'm afraid to say it was me who broke first. Are people who win this kind of money happy? I asked.
Sometimes.
Sometimes? I must confess I'd expected a more unequivocal answer, and I told him so. He smiled again.
Of the winners I've spoken to, I'd say about 10% have their lives changed permanently for the better. Another 20% have some degree of positive change.
Such as?
Living life without worrying about bills or large expenditure. Plus a few nice holidays, cars, investments, that sort of thing.
And the rest?
About another 20% have no real change at all. They're the ones who spend it quickly, like one might blow a Christmas bonus, but on a larger scale. Life snaps back to normal for them fairly quickly, by and large.
That still leaves 50% of the winners.
Yes.
Are they not happy?
I would say that their lives change in an unexpected way. Often, this change is something they find difficult. Either adapting to the new direction their lives have taken, or coming to terms with the fact that a lot of their previous life is no longer possible. Friends look at them differently. Jobs, or at least employment, matters less. It's hard to strike a balance between being generous and patronising. And partners, of course.
Partners?
It may sound strange, but great wealth is like great poverty. Not part of the deal, you see. You meet someone, you fall in love, you marry them, and you assess the situation that might put you into, consciously or not. As long as things go along broadly on the same expected tracks, all is well for the most part. Unless you get bored of the tracks, of course. However, suddenly being rich is like suddenly being poor. It was not part of the original assessment and, like it or not, people, things, life, changes.
That word again. So you're telling me that I have a 50% chance of things, life, changing for the worse?
Or a 30% chance of some improvement. I suppose it's all a bit of a gamble. It's really all about how happy you are now and how much happier you might be.
No, I'm not really a gambler, I replied.
You bought a lottery ticket, didn't you?
He smiled again, and I must admit it had begun to annoy me. By the time I was home, I'd made my mind up. We didn't need this money. We didn't want this money. We had a life that we both loved, and I honestly couldn't think of a single way I would change it. I also decided that I would take the burden of this knowledge on myself. I hope you believe me that this was just me trying to save you from stress. I'm a natural worrier. I'm good at it. Why should it need to be your problem too? And I was afraid. I was afraid of what you'd say or if you actually wanted the changes the money would bring. That our nice little life wasn't enough for you after all. If I wasn't enough for you. So I kept my mouth shut. For about 9 months, I didn't even really think about it. Then, one day, you looked out of the window at the shed. It was a bit old and a bit dilapidated here and there, and suddenly that offended you.
We need a new one of those.
We don't need a new one. You'll recall I usually said this almost instinctively whenever the possibility of having to shop in a garden centre or a DIY place came up.
Oh, come on. I'm sure we can afford it.
I was only half listening and I grunted that we probably could. And that was when you asked me.
much have we actually got in the account?
You'd never asked that before. Money was always what I took care of, and it was always enough. It was like an unspoken agreement that I took care of that side of things, so the question properly shook me. Suddenly faced with having to come clean, I looked directly into your beautiful, trusting eyes, and I lied. I confirmed we had about 30,000, which was true before the win. I neglected to mention my estimate included a margin for error of over 260%. And you smiled and stated victoriously that this determined we would shortly be shopping for a new shed. I let you have the win, already sick with myself for the lie. Had things been normal, I would probably have troubled myself about it for a few days, and then my resolve would have broken and I'd have told you everything. But something else came up. The following day, you went to see the doctor. It's pretty easy for things to go out of your mind when your life becomes dictated by hospital appointments and discussions about treatment, and waiting for the next hospital appointment or the next discussion about treatment. Everything else just seems to fade into the background. Yes, even a lottery win. There were a couple of times it came to mind. The first was when I lingered after one of our appointments with Dr. Singh, the one where the diagnosis was properly confirmed and we started to talk about... I think you'd gone to the loo or something, but I hung back and asked the doctor straight. I said, if money was absolutely no object, is there anything else that can be done? He looked at me as if he'd heard the question before. People happy to sell their possessions, cars, houses, anything and everything for a better chance. He shook his head. It was then that I explained that we weren't talking about a couple of hundred thousand quid. We were talking about millions. His face didn't change, and he said simply,
"Perhaps use it to enjoy the time you have left together."
Of course, I sought a second opinion, and a third. The fact is, though, everyone I asked said the same thing. This was not a problem you could solve with money. Any amount of money. I remember one night, not long after that, that we were sitting at home and I thought back to what the doctor had said. I even made to broach the subject, but that night, and almost every other time I was about to suggest something, you just said you intended to fight it, not give up and make your peace with it. No big holiday. No last big blowout. Just keep fighting. And then, suddenly, there wasn't any more time at all. No time for bucket list. I was too busy trying to get food into you and getting you to keep it down. Or trying to get medication into you and getting you to keep it down. Or just being grateful that you were able to sleep through so much of it. Holding your hand while you did. The doctor said between 1 and 4 months. You made it 6 weeks. My brave girl. Obviously, in the last days, the money didn't cross my mind at all, and once you... didn't seem to matter. I briefly looked at making the funeral as lavish as possible, but none of the expensive options seemed right. Do you know how utterly vulgar a £25,000 coffin actually is? And as you'd insisted on crematorium service, I couldn't even donate the money to a church. Your further insistence of everyone wearing bright colours but don't waste money on flowers meant I couldn't even make the local florist rich. I put £2,000 behind the bar at the Bowls Club where we all went after the funeral. Funny thing was that when it was all over, they gave me £1,600 back. We had one hell of a party. You'd have been in your element. But I suppose our friends aren't much for drinking. Either that or I misjudged how cheap the Bowls Club bar was. Anyway, the following day, a very nice man came over with it as I was just about to pop out to the shops. I just told him to keep it behind the bar and let whoever wants have a free drink. But he didn't seem comfortable with that. I suppose the till at the clubhouse isn't used to handling so much money. So I stuffed it in my pocket and thought about trying to jam it into a collection tin if I saw one in town. In the end, I just sheepishly passed it over the counter of a charity shop. The lady who took it just said, "Thank you, that's very kind." I don't know what I expected, some sort of fanfare perhaps. Perhaps I should have said, "This was the undrunk bar money from my wonderful wife's funeral. Go and do great things with it, noble charity lady." That might have given it some sort of occasion, and that's what it deserved. One last gesture from both of us before it all became just me. And so, here I've been. You probably know the rest from whatever cloud you're sitting on. I racked my brains at first, trying to think what to do with the money. I wanted to get rid of it as soon as possible. You see, now it seemed tarnished. It was a secret, you see? The only secret I ever kept from you. And the only thing I had ever lied to you about. Well, apart from how much I really spent on the Fiat 126 project. We never had secrets from each other. And as the days turned to weeks and the weeks to months, it began to bear more and more heavily on me. I started not being able to sleep. Looking at things which reminded me of you, which in our house was pretty much everything, became harder and harder. The whole house, our house, started to become something I didn't feel I deserved even to stand in. I started walking during the day. I walked everywhere. I walked for miles just to be away from the house. But the problem was that it just gave me more time to brood. Each time, imagining you looking at me and the weak, gutless idiot that I was. A man so frightened of losing you and our perfect life that I tarnished it all, even the memory of it, by lying and keeping secrets. One day the guilt was so extreme I couldn't go home at all. I sat on a battered, splintery bench at the Bowls Club and just looked down the hill at the streets. Then at the streetlights lighting them. Then at the morning mist shrouding them. I then realised that I had sat there all night, just staring into space. It was then that I realised I needed help. The next problem I had was, who can you talk to about a problem like this? After I'd got home and drunk a cup of coffee, I realised that there was one person who might have the answer. So I called Martin, the very nice psychologist man from the lottery company. Martin listened patiently and politely as I explained that I'd never told my wife about the win and why. And now that you'd gone, I couldn't think beyond this deception and how I spent every day walking for miles and how the night before I'd sat on the bench and nearly frozen to death. Once again, his reaction was as though he had actually heard this sort of thing before. When I was finished, his advice was simple and clear.
I think you should probably just tell her.
So, that was that. Now, you will probably be aware that it wasn't as simple as just going out the door and doing it. I have, in fact, waited 3 more days before I finally had the courage to do so. But here I am, and there it all is. And this is the really hard bit. Now, I've told you, and you know. You see, whatever scenario I imagine you being in, it's always a loving one. You're cross with me, of course. The version of you standing up is cross because I didn't trust you. And the sitting down version is cross because I got myself into such a state. And the benevolent one, she just smiles. And I know how wrong I was. And I'm so sorry. And there you are again. Standing one is walking over to put her arm round me. The sitting one is getting up to do the same. And the benevolent one, as always, just smiles. And those are the memories of you that I will cherish most. When I'm choosing which charities to give all that money away to in your name. When I'm sitting on the brand new Bowls Club bench I had dedicated to you. Looking down at the town and remembering that I didn't just win some money. In meeting you, I won the lottery of life. And even if I have to face the rest of mine as a loser, it's all okay. It's okay because of the way you still look at me. Even though I'm a Burke. Thank you for being mine. Thank you for understanding. I have to go now. We have a new garden shed coming. And please don't say I told you so. Anyway, I need to make sure they can get into the garden. But I'll be back tomorrow. And I promise, tomorrow, I'll bring flowers.
In A Little Bit of Luck, Adam was played by John Crowley, Gail was played by Lynn Crowley, Martin was played by Chris Bedford, Beth was played by Maxine Evans, and Dr. Singh was played by Tony Green. We hope you enjoyed A Little Bit of Luck. We would love to hear your feedback on this and our other radio plays, so please do get in touch with us at springlineradioplayers@outlook.com. Thank you for listening. This has been brought to you by Springline Productions.